the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast is just two guys and maybe a guest or two discussing Bitcoin, Bitcoin equities, and the related macroeconomic space. It's not meant to be financial advice, so please, if you're doing any investing after listening to our program, do your own research, do your own due diligence, and understand that any money you invest can be lost. The show is meant for entertainment purposes only, and we hope you enjoy the program.
Perfect. Okay, good. Len, I like that. All right. So we got a couple of pretty good stories here. I want to start with one out of Australia. The Australian Prime Minister, Anthony Albanese, faced criticism after his recent comments seemed to equate humorous memes mocking him with misinformation that should be removed from the internet. Incredible. Social media platforms have a responsibility to make sure that misinformation isn't got out there. That's a quote. He then referred to instances where fake images of himself had been removed from various sites. Scribe, what am I to make of politicians who don't like their citizens pumping out high quality memes of them and demand that they are removed from the internet under the guise of misinformation, as if I don't know that these obviously edited photos of politicians are edited and only for jokes? Should this guy, I mean, the prison colony of Australia, things are not going well over there for a number of reasons now, but this is a bad one. I would say this is a pretty bad one.
Well, I've heard the food is great there. No, bro, look.
Who did you hear that from? What are you talking about? The food? Oh, no.
Yeah, no, look, I've heard the Australian cuisine is spectacular. No, I think these politicians have our best interest at heart. And I think, you know, if they don't want us seeing these memes, then we probably shouldn't see them. And yeah, right. Are Australians pumping out good memes? I don't know if I've gotten any.
I don't know. Okay, this is a runoff of a story that Australia actually wants Twitter, X, whatever, to censor certain quote unquote misinformation and like hate speech in Australia, but also is suing them to censor the same stuff everywhere. So Australians don't want it or can't have it, and no one else can have it either. Like, these guys are losing their minds over there. Don't forget, during COVID, these guys were like among the worst in terms of restrictions and lockdowns. Like, I'm pretty sure they just went into another 7 days to slow the spread like a week ago. I'm pretty sure. I wouldn't be surprised. I can't believe this guy's not wearing a mask in the fucking media clip here. Not good.
Yeah, no, that's like, anybody that still trusts these idiots, is they deserve them as leaders, like, as far as I'm concerned. If you're still in Australia after 2022, I mean, holy.
It's a good time over there. I mean, the surf is good. You do have to contend with spiders the size of your fucking head when you open a door to go outside. I want to actually play the clip. I think I have it in the story. I do. Okay, hold on. Let's see. Maybe it's not as bad as they're saying, but it is, you know, being quoted by our favorite Twitter account, Clown World. So let's have a look here. Let's be sure.
Media,
can you guys hear that?
Platforms have a responsibility to make sure that misinformation isn't got out there. I noticed today, for example, on the way up here, they've removed various sites that were up containing fake images of myself superimposed on other people. That's the sort of thing that is going on social media. Social media has a responsibility to do the right thing here.
Who is social media? And also, I can't trust anybody who says superimposed. What year is it? You don't superimpose things anymore. What the fuck are you talking about, man?
Jesus. Do you remember when Trump put his face on Rocky?
Yeah. I can't wait for the memes to cycle. That guy needs to be in every race, man. He needs to be in every race. I love it.
The beauty of that was that he knew, like, the response was going to be media will fact check this and say that this isn't his actual body.
He's not Rocky. He's not Stallone. Just in case you weren't sure, we need to ban this man propagating this misinformation. Okay, let's go to the next notable story. This is near and dear to me here in Canada. A Canadian town in the Gulf of St. Lawrence, the name of which I will certainly mispronounce, the archipelago Île de la Madeleine, will only officials say that the requirement of a QR code to enter or leave will only be for tourists, while residents will be required to show their driver's license to enter or leave. Interesting stuff. So the claim is that they don't want people overstaying their welcome. They want to make sure people pay their fees, taxes, whatever, before they leave. And they are now implementing a QR code system to come in or out of this little jurisdiction in the Gulf of St. Lawrence. This is red meat for the 15-minute city crowd. And I am unclear as to why this has to be the system to make this kind of stuff happen. Surely you can do what we do here in Ontario. If I use the paid highway, they just take a picture of my license plate, send me a bill in the mail. And even if I don't pay it for 5 years, when I go to renew my license, they're going to make me pay my 407 bill. And they've done it in the past because I've chosen not to pay them or forgot to pay them. It happens to everybody. It's insane to me that this QR code is being issued after the 15-minute city thing, after COVID when there's QR codes for the vaccines. Why throw anyone any red meat unless you're really planning on doubling down on this system? What do you think, Scribe?
My favorite part of this story is that it's the little, was it a township? What's a municipality?
Yeah, basically. Yeah.
It's 12,000 people and everything. I pulled up the stories. It's all just residents complaining about it. How did, if we live in a, if Canada is this beautiful democracy, how in the world are all 12,000 residents super upset with this, but it still goes through?
This is a great point. Yeah. How do we stop this? So the decision to require a QR code for the municipality's 12,000 plus residents came after the municipal government announced it would begin charging all visitors who come to the island $30, something which hasn't gone down well with the locals, as you mentioned, or their family members who visit them. Pretty jokes. Like the idea that you would charge people to come to an area that, if I think, like, I don't know the area that well, but if I think about other sort of small municipalities with 10 or 12,000 people, what is the thing they're all begging for year round? It's like local economy inputs, and they want your GDP, they want your tourism, they want your visits, they want your money. And now you're going to charge them $30 to come. Like, whose idea was this? This is Canadian economics at its best, by the way. This is something we see all the time, just completely backwards stuff here. I don't understand what they're trying to do.
Yeah. Well, the QR code goes back to our discussion at the beginning, very beginning of the show about your privacy. Like they don't just, they're going to be tracking you. Like, it's just one step towards something that you don't want. So I would say don't cede the ground here, but man, like, I don't know. It's just so funny to me because you're supposed, you know, the idea is you live in a town small enough where you know your representatives so that if they do something dumb, they've got to shop at the same grocery stores as you. They've got to see you face to face. So the idea that this is such a small municipality where all of the residents seem upset by it, but it's still passed is peak. It's peak 2024. Like, this is where we all are now.
What if I told you you can get more peak 2024? End of the story here. And I quote, despite concerns, Antonin Valiquette, the mayor of Ile de la Madeleine, says that the QR code and driver's license requirements are legal and that his biggest concern right now is what, Scribe? What's his biggest concern?
I don't know. Hit me with it.
Fighting disinformation.
No, quote, of course.
Combating disinformation among the citizens for whom the members of the municipal council and I work is what is important. Isn't the important thing actually that you don't do shit that all of them don't want you to do? Isn't that actually the important thing? Not just telling them they're wrong and anything you see online is misinformation. I could have fucking swore that was the job, but I guess not. That might be like, misinformation too.
We need to fight the disinformation that 11,990 of our 12,000 residents are receiving. Just,
oh, fuck. Tabernak. Okay. Let's go to another story from Notable North here. I'm going to share this video. I don't really know what to make of this, okay? I don't often share videos of the PM, but I can't really do justice to what was said here. People know we're in a housing crisis here in Canada. The feds have promised to build some insane number of homes in Canada. Actually, I think the word was unlock homes, which worries me a bit, but they promised to build some insane number of homes. You need to build something like 5,000 homes a day for basically 7 years, no weekends off, no hours off. And our prime minister was speaking about some of his plans and his party's plans in terms of building those homes recently. Let's have a listen.
How many houses does he have, by the way?
Hard to say. He lives at Sussex. I don't know what that costs, but let's listen to this clip and okay. we'll see if there's any validity to what he says.
For example, has more than 1,700 post offices across.
Hold on, we got to back up here. The first word is Canada Post. I don't know why it's not playing it, but let's listen here. Hold on, one more time from the top.
For example, has more than 1,700 post offices across the country, many of them in central locations in their communities. We could build homes or apartments on top of these offices that meets the needs of communities while maintaining the services Canadians expect. On national defense properties that are not required for defense operations, we can build affordable housing and prioritize the needs of members of the Canadian Armed Forces and their families. Work is already underway with the Department of National Defense to unlock 14 surplus properties for homes. Now, it's not how previous governments used to do things. For example, has more than seven.
Well, my official comment is that I think it's a really good idea. And I'm glad that we've got our sort of shovels in the ground already. We're going to be building on top of post offices and sounds like giving up some national defense installations, of which, by the way, there cannot be that many. Our military is basically just, you know, sticks and stones at this point. I don't know your thoughts, Scribe, as an American here. How many post office apartment buildings do you have over there? Surely you guys have pioneered this technique, and we're just going to be learning from you. You've already broken the tape on this, I would imagine. No,
Joey, you know what we have here? I don't know if you have these in Canada. We've got boxes where you can drop your mail off at any time of the day. Why not put a guy in there, dude? Why not have someone live in that thing?
We actually stopped. We stopped doing door-to-door mail service here a while ago. And like, I still have a mailbox in my house, thank God. But a lot of like the place I lived before, I was a community box. And I just laugh every time people are like, no, Canada Post is like a valuable institution. Because sometimes you hear like the government say Canada Post is a valuable institution too. They don't want to like, you know, speak ill of the post office. But all I keep hearing is the post office can't take your cash for Bitcoin or QR codes anymore. They won't pack your packages when you go there. It's incredible. I went there to do a return like 3 months ago. I think I said this on the show. And I got into a confrontation with the guy because he wouldn't let me use the tape behind the counter. Said I had to buy tape. Their official policy is that you have to buy the fucking tape to tape your fucking package up. Like, okay, man. And now you're telling me that the post office is just going to be the lobby of the, you know, the high rise that you're going to be stuffing people into to get the home numbers up. I don't know. Doesn't sound to me like Canada Post has a real future in this country. Do you think I might be onto something there? I think I might be.
Yeah, but this is, look, we talk about shared value. If you throw some government housing on top of them,
anything, it's a big win. That's a huge win. That's synergy, as we say.
I like this post office pods. Yeah,
we got to do that. We got to do that. I think I might, if I ever want to expand this studio, I might just do the next CBP episode out of a mailbox. Good acoustics in there, I hear.
Bro, if you put a Meta face mask on too, you'd be set, man.
Come watch me in VR from inside.
Like a feeding tube in a VR headset inside of a mailbox.
What a disaster. I love it. You know, you just sometimes we do the show, and like Len doesn't often tell me exactly what story he's going to pick. But this week, obviously, like I had to go through and pick the stories. And honest to God, man, like I didn't put enough of them in the show notes, but the number of stories you could pick in terms of notable content, which is the new name for the second segment, it's unlimited. You could just go through your bookmarks, go through your likes, go through like the Twitter articles that everyone's sharing, and it's everywhere. Is there's no end to the madness. So the next story we're going to talk about is an article in the Financial Post. The title, Young Canadians Think Retiring at 65 is an Outdated Concept. I'm not sure about that. Canadians' views on retirement are shifting dramatically as the cost of living rises and longer life expectancies become the norm, with the idea of retiring at age 65 being one of the early casualties. I can only hope that I will also be an early casualty if you can't retire. 74% of Canadians between the ages of 24 and 44, that's you and me, minus the Canadian thing for your side of things, say the conventional retirement age, with the notion that it represents a hard stop on one's working life, is an outdated concept, according to a National Ledger survey published by Wealthsimple. There's no chance. Okay. I don't know what the fucking question was. I have Wealthsimple on my phone. I don't look at it often because I don't like trade stocks, but I don't know what the fucking question was. There is no way that anybody under the age of 44 suddenly is like, you know what? I'll just work until the fucking skin falls off my fingers. Don't worry about it. Retiring at 65 is outdated. I'd rather work till 75 or 80. No one is saying that. Do you know anyone who's saying that? Are you saying that? Who's saying that?
I don't know anyone saying they want to. I know almost everybody knows that they have to at this point.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. I mean, interesting. Like, we've got this system here called Social Security that I don't know. A lot of people are saying it's a Ponzi scheme.
Some buzz around that.
I think based on that thing, I don't think I'm eligible to get it until I'm like 74 and a half or something.
I love it. We talked about this on the show a couple weeks ago, and I think I mentioned it to you guys in our private chat, but I'll say it again. Okay. All I see, if you look at this, not through the lens of like fake surveys, look at it instead through the lens of what you just said, Social Security, the pension here in Canada, CPP, whatever, is never going to last. They know it's not long for this world. So if you look at things through that lens, what do you see? You see the government in the budget talking about extending amortizations to 35 years when you buy your first house. The average age for a first-time home buyer in Canada in 2022 was 36. So, you know, what is it now? 38, 39, your amortization is 35 years. Suddenly you're 74 years old working to just pay off your mortgage. Okay. That's number one. Number two is that the healthcare system, you know, not really that great. So maybe you'll be sick one time or two times during your career. You might not be getting paid. And so you have to work longer for your house. Maybe they'll come up with some way to protect your mortgage for that time. They can get you till you're 80. The problem is that the jobs that like 75 and 80 year old guys used to have, like, you know, saying hello and slapping the smiley face on you at Walmart, they're going to be done by like, you know, sex bots or something in the next like 5 or 6 years. So like where are these guys working? There's no one going to like the local community center to swim. There's no like, you know, old basket guy swapping your clothes out for your fucking tag. So what exactly are these people going to be doing till they're 75 or 80 years old? There's always this idea that, yeah, you could keep working, you're healthy, but there's no job for you. And then also like, just from an ethical, like esoteric sort of point of view here, what right does anybody have to tell me that I have to give my one crack on God's green earth to bolstering the GDP number at all costs for as long as I possibly can? No questions asked. Thanks to a Wealthsimple survey. Where do you get off telling me that? Does anyone have that right? This is another thing. I don't sympathize with the Zoomers almost at all. I think they're softer than baby shit a lot of the time, but they're right about one thing. And the one thing is that working is less and less appealing because you're just being told you have to work forever. No one will give you a decent job. The wages are fucking terrible and you don't get anything out of it. Like you live in like a little fucking post office pod. You come home from your post office pod you jerk off, watch Netflix, fall asleep, you know, fart into your KFC, Uber Eats box, and then do it again the next day. You know, like what is the point? Who wants to do this? Nobody wants to do this. This is insane to me. But if you look at it through that lens of Social Security is broke, there's a reason why they're pushing people to work longer. They can't pay. They just can't pay. That's what it is.
Yeah. The unfortunate part is that, you know, it's the future is very dim for a lot of people. And instead of people thinking, man, we should do something to change this or I should get to the bottom of why this is happening, they just complain and fucking eat flaming hot Cheetos and watch TV all day. This is the exact reason. You get a bunch of people that don't care at all about what they do. You're not surprised when you go to a store or you go to a restaurant and your food comes out wrong, or like you go to a grocery store and everything's in the wrong place and the shelves are a disaster. My first job ever was at a grocery store and I restocked shelves and worked at the cash register. I held a conversation with the people as they went through. I made sure the shelves looked good. You know, as part of your job, you just did it. Now you don't see that at all. I mean, nobody can really hold a conversation with you. Nobody will look at you in the eyes. You go to the grocery store and you've got an employee that works there that's just pushing around. I don't know if you have these in Canada, but these people that order their groceries for pickup or for delivery, these employees are just pushing around massive carts with like boxes on them. And they're just, they're in your way constantly. And they've got no problem being in your way, even though you're a customer at their store. Like, so this is why you get this is because these people don't care at all about what they're doing. And then to talk about people aging, man, imagine you're 70 years old and the company that you work for or something goes under because I don't know, you decide to shut down an entire economy for 2 years.
Your entire sector is now all the work's being done by advanced sex bots again.
So, yeah. You've been, something like that.
By sex bots again.
Yeah. Or like, you know, whatever, something happens and And because everybody's, as you put it, softer than baby shit, you shut down an entire economy for 2 years. Yeah. Let's say just hypothetically, you lose your job because of that and you're 70 and now you've got to come back into the workforce at 70 years old. Who's going to hire you? No company that's looking for somebody to be around for more than, I don't know, what's the average lifespan? 73?
What is the average lifespan? Is it 73 only for men? It probably is not even that high. I think it's decreasing now.
I know in the US it's coming down because everybody's on heroin, basically. So
yeah. You got to choose your way. At 35, you either get on Ozempic or on heroin, but there's no third option.
You're going to lose weight with both.
One or the other. It's one needle or the other. Boomer in the chat raising a good point here. So I didn't even mention this. The new budget also allows you to take up to $100K out of your RRSP, so your retirement savings, for a down payment on a house. So cash in your retirement and spend 35 years paying off the house. It's like something out of fucking Black Mirror, honestly, the way that these guys treat retirement and the expectation that you should ever have a break. Heaven forbid you don't work till you die.
Again, I would just say too, like how many people in Canada have $100,000 in their retirement accounts? I don't know. It's probably not that many.
No, it's not that many. You're absolutely right. Okay, let's go to the next one.
I'm sure you're going to pay a fee when you take it out early.
So you do actually, I mentioned this in a tweet. You have to pay it all back, or you pay it as capital gains. And so the chances are, the worst part is that if you take it at like 30 to buy a house, when you get taxed on it, let's assume it's like 7 years later, you pay at the rate you are then at. So chances are you're making more when you're 37 than when you're 30, or 32 than when you're 25. So now they get you on everything, right? Everyone wants your fucking money all the time. It never stops. So let's go to the next story here. There's one I want to add to the rundown after this about cottages and whatnot that I thought was pretty funny. Canadians, this is in Toronto Star. The title of the article, you can't make this up. This is unbelievable. The PSYOP is intensifying here in Canada. So you may never own a home. Here's why maybe that's a good thing. And the article has, this is really like, you have to share this because the picture they use and the sort of framing is just, you know, you can't do it justice just talking about it. And so I'm going to put it up on the screen again here. I don't pay for Toronto Star because it's a rag, but look at this woman. Do you not want this sort of, you know, freedom? Do you not want this? Look at this. This woman is stress-free. Why? She'll never own a home. That's why. Owning a home is stressful. It's very stressful. Let's find out how stressful. The federal government recently announced changes to the borrowing limits on RRSP home buyers plan and introduced 30-year AM mortgages. It's 35 in some cases for first-time home buyers purchasing new homes. Moves meant to make home ownership more affordable. All those measures, by the way, will put upward price pressure on housing here in Canada. While it's easy to feel owning a home is a life goal, it may not be a bad thing to consider forgetting it altogether, not putting it off, not moving to a place where you can afford a home, not thinking about finding a partner who can help you buy a home and start a life with you, but forgetting it altogether. Here are the benefits of being a lifelong renter. You can't make this up. There's geographic flexibility in being a renter. Yeah, you can move anywhere, sure. But why wouldn't you just move to a place where you can afford a fucking house and put roots down? Okay, like this is the thing people understand. The stability that comes with owning a home is what leads to family formation. Many studies have been done on declining birth rates. There's a number of factors in declining birth rates, okay? Of course, without cutting your teeth at the grocery store job, you can't talk to a chick at a bar. You don't know how. That's a problem. The dating apps and the Pareto principle, those are a problem. But a bigger problem that's not discussed because it's inconvenient is that when you don't have a home, you don't start a family because there's no stability. There's no community around you. You don't have the impulse to grow in the place where you are. It's a problem. Or you can listen to this clown. You can end your lease, pack up, and plant roots elsewhere. Like, yeah, when you lose your job to a sex bot, it's frictionless. You can go anywhere and rent another fucking post office bot. Perfect. You can
live in a post office.
It's great. You don't have to get your hands dirty as a renter. What does that mean? It just means you don't have to learn any skills. You know, if you weren't always DIYing another house project, oh man, just imagine the extra time you'd have to invest in growing your income or playing with your kids if you weren't DIYing. This is sick, okay? One of the joys when I was growing up, doing stuff with my father was learning stuff about the house, learning stuff about, you know, like What are you doing to the house? Why are we doing this to the house? We're improving it. We're spending money on it. There's a renovation. There's an addition. There's a pool, whatever, right? Over the years, that's how you build the foundation for goal setting. When you can look at your father, your parents, whatever, and say like, man, you know, this house used to look a certain way. Now it looks this way. How did that happen? Mm-hmm. It happened because we planned. We found time and made a plan to save and spend money on the house and grow the equity and give you guys a better place to live. Not a fucking apartment building, okay? This is ridiculous. You might end up with a lot more free cash flow. I don't know. It seems to me like if you didn't have the means to buy a house, more free cash flow might not be something you find in your fortune cookie. Do you agree with that, Scribe? Am I missing something there? I'm pretty sure that I have that nailed down.
Yeah, I 100% agree. Most of the people I know that are these like lifelong renters are lifelong renters because they'd never saved enough to buy a house. And I don't think, I mean, there are definitely a lot of cases where people don't earn enough to save enough. But look, if you're renting, you're just paying somebody else's mortgage, right? So it's not like your rents, I've never ever been in a situation where my rent has gone down year over year. I've never even been in a situation where it stayed stable. So you're just gonna be paying somebody else's mortgage. Like you're not getting more free cash flow.
More free time with your kids and more free cash flow. Less debt. As a renter, homeowners find themselves in need of fast cash and use home equity line to borrow. How about the scare quotes on borrow against the equity they have in their home? Homeowners just need to cover the interest typically, but don't necessarily have to pay the principal money back until they sell the home. Sounds nice, right? Think again. Many homeowners have basically turned their homes into ATM machines. That is just not true.
Yeah.
It's not true. It doesn't work like that. The interest on large sums of money on your home equity line will pile up, believe me. Okay. You can't buy a roof on your house without noticing it on your monthly outgoing payments.
Yeah.
The upside for renters, they don't have access to the loans. The upside is you're trapped in your credit card debt and your non-collateralized line of credit at a rate that is quadruple what I pay when I borrow against my house. Yeah, good job. Here's your cupcake.
Instead of your 5% HELOC, you've got a 27% Visa card.
You can against your fucking Visa card. The ATM is 20% as soon as you touch the cash.
You can add a bullet point to this article. It's like you can't get air miles with Delta when you borrow against your house.
I love it. These guys putting these stories in, like, it really makes me laugh. And I shouldn't laugh at all of it because I do sympathize with people who can't buy a fucking house. Okay. I get it. It's fucking hard. I got friends who are in that situation, but man, the idea that the press has the testicular fortitude to run to the editor's room and say, yeah, I want to run this story about not being able to own a house and living in a post office pod or whatever. Like it's not right. And you're setting the bar so low for Canadians, and there is something to be said about expectation setting. And if the expectation is owning a home, you will find that people push to own a home and think that they can do it. And when you think you can do something, you'd be surprised about the results. You may overachieve in a lot of cases. That happens to everybody, you know? But if you think that the only option for you is living in an apartment, jerking off into your crusty sock again, and turning on the latest Sydney Sweeney movie, maybe not in that order, actually. I guess you'd probably be doing it in the opposite order. The crusty sock was in the equation. But like, I just don't understand why people think that, why people don't understand. Why are Canadians, why are they not working as hard? Why is our productivity so low? Why this, why that? Well, could it be possibly because there's no aspirational youth anymore? Like, what happened to that? I always wanted better for myself. My father and mother wanted better for themselves and for us. Yeah, I'm sure your parents are the same way. A lot of my friends' parents are the same way. This doesn't help that. It's insane. Do you guys see stories like this in the States? I don't look at a lot of US newspapers, but these ones come across my feed all the time. It's like steady nonsense, completely insane.
I never consume any real media from any of our mainstream sources. So I don't know if there's stories about this, but I can tell you 100% from personal experience that the difference between living in a neighborhood where you own a house and the majority of people in the neighborhood own their houses versus living in an apartment complex where nobody owns anything, the difference is massive. You know, like I live in a relatively small neighborhood in a pretty remote part of the US, and I know all of my neighbors. I've helped them with their own house projects. They've helped me with mine. I was talking to a couple down the street the other day while I was walking my dog. They built in this neighborhood in 68. My house was built in 74. They knew the people that built this house.
Amazing.
They knew the people that have lived here throughout the entirety of this house's history. And now I live here, and there's plenty of projects to be done in this house. I've done all of them so far myself, replaced a bunch of flooring. I've done all of the walls.
You've been there, what, 2 years, I want to say?
Just over a year. And I've done a massive amount of work. I'm finishing out the basement, putting in a home gym, fixing up my deck out back. So just a massive amount of work, and saved, hands down, without a doubt in my mind, tens of thousands of dollars in labor costs by learning and doing them myself.
Yeah.
And the biggest thing I think that comes with owning your own place and doing the work yourself, getting your hands dirty, as that article would have put it, you feel much more connected to the house. You have more respect for it. Like, go to any of these apartments. You can even say the luxury apartments that somehow they managed to build in 4 weeks. And they call them luxury because there's faux granite on the countertops instead of, but you go to any of them and you see the people that live there, and these people know they're only going to be there for a year or two before they move. So they have no respect for it. They don't expect to take care of it. They don't expect their neighbors to take care of anything. So it's very sad. Like, I recommend everybody buying an older house to start with and fixing it up yourself and meeting your neighbors and taking some pride in where you live. You know, unfortunately, I think we see the media attack that, and actually, as you just pointed out, go for the exact opposite. We're like, you shouldn't feel pride. Like, you kicked somebody else out of this house, or like, yeah, no, that's bullshit. Buy an older house, fix it up yourself, take care of it, have some respect in it. And live in it for a little while. Stop viewing real estate purely as a way to make money and start thinking about it as a way to, like you said, settle down and start thinking about forming a family and contribute to your neighborhood a bit. So I think it's the best thing we all can do.
Yeah, that's very well said, Scribe. And, you know, a lot of Canadians for a lot of years have been doing this in cottage country. We famously have like a really popular cottage country here in Ontario and other provinces too, because of the lake system that we share with you guys. And, well, you know, a lot of people wanted to buy cottages and build up a little bit of equity and improve the cottages and share them with family. You know, I was lucky enough when I was a kid to go visit family and friends at their cottages and made some great memories tubing and roasting marshmallows and, you know, making a lot of progress, like personally, and you know, over the years, it's just been a lot of fun visiting those places, and development wise, it was always appreciated on my part. But in Canada now, that's not allowed either. We got another story here, last one of the night, from the Globe and Mail, Paul Kershaw, who looks exactly as you would imagine, talking about, you are no longer middle class if you own a cottage or investment property. This one is interesting to me. I've talked before about how my dad's got some real estate. This really pisses me off. This is in relation to the capital gains tax that has roused rabble in a lot of Canadian media circles and Bitcoin circles. The idea now that you should be able to sell a property that you spent 30 or 40 years building, repairing, improving, and enjoying in a lot of ways. You didn't buy it to flip it. You didn't buy it to, like you said, make a quick buck. You did it to settle down, right? It's part of your life. You thought it was good for your kids, good for your family. Now, thanks to the capital gains changes, and I think about 50 days from now, maybe a little less, you will not enjoy the same exclusion from capital gains. I think it changes from a 50% discount to a 30% discount above $250,000. As you know, people listening to the show know, the price of real estate here in Canada is, you know, going vertical more and more by the month. Cottage country, double as much. You've heard Mark Jeff DeVic talk on this show about how he was waiting for a market crash to buy a cottage. He's been waiting since 1990 and so far hasn't had any luck. And so this story talking about how you're actually richer than middle class if you own one of these homes and should be taxed, and owning a special property is no longer a marker of the middle class. We need Ottawa to recalibrate the tax code for the present, not the past. More taxation of second properties is necessary. The worst part about this is that they even call them mom and pop investors. Mom and pop investors are just people who are doing the same things you and me are doing in Bitcoin, trying to get away from a debased currency that's, you know, failing in terms of its key features, and also starting to waver in terms of its saving potential. And I really find this to be frustrating, because I think that there's a lot of people who, you know, come from meager means who have found a way to buy a small property on the lake, or you know, were the first guy on an empty lake and, you know, spent their time quite literally like weed whacking paths to get to and from the property, to and from the lake, helping the neighbors, as you mentioned, you know, stuff that you're doing in your community, and adding value to those areas through their contributions and through the stability that they bring. And now they're being penalized for it. Again, these are a lot of middle-class people, mom and pop investors, as they mentioned. I find this sort of article despicable. Mr. Kershaw, you know, a professor of public policy, I believe someone told me earlier today.
So he's an expert.
Yeah, Generation Squeeze has a podcast actually that I try to listen to, but it's just unbelievably whiny and sad. Canada's leading voice for generational fairness. Certainly not their leading voice for modern hairstyles, I'll tell you that. He looks like Lyle Lovett. I don't know if you guys know who that is, but
does he have that broccoli cut?
Yeah, pretty sure. It's like
that's
pretty
modern.
Yeah, is it? It's something. I don't know exactly what it's I would call it, but it's
kiddos these days.
It's not good. It's not good. And this guy doesn't speak for me. He doesn't speak for me.
Papers on this.
He's in the fucking peer review ecosystem waiting for your comments. I hate this. I hate this fucking story. This drives me nuts. People like the other thing, if you take away all the other stuff about mom and pop investing and all that stuff, the country here in Canada, we're in a clear decline. There's not that many places where for not much money, you can enjoy some of the simple pleasures of life with friends and family away from all the madness, except these cottages.
Yeah.
And now you're telling me that you can't enjoy it. You can't pass it down to your kids for them to enjoy it without taking a huge tax penalty. It's insane. It's insane to me. Your thoughts, sir?
Well, you know, they look at neighborhoods a lot like the neighborhood that I'm in, where you've got a bunch of people who have, you know, most of the people that live in my neighborhood have been here for a long time. I bought my house from an estate. Essentially, the person who built the house passed away, and I was able to get the house from his estate. And you take these neighborhoods that these people have put tens of years or, you know, decades of their life into, where they've owned a house, they know the neighbors, they've built things, they've got a lot of respect for the community. And you get a bunch of these people that come in who, you know, live in the middle of a downtown area that is riddled with crime. You know, it's like has all of the things that people that live in these neighborhoods don't want any, they've got no interest in. Like, I don't want to live on top of everybody. I don't want to have people right next to me, right above me, right below me. I don't want to have to worry about walking to my car. You know, if I have a wife or children, I want them to be able to play with the neighbors and not have to worry about a car going 40 down the street and hitting them.
That's miles per hour. People get 40 miles per hour.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. I don't know what to convert that to, but like, you take them and then you take all these people, like this guy's this genius who works in a university, comes through, who's probably pro, you should never own a house ever, who's maybe never owned a house himself. And he comes in and says, no, what you guys are doing is actually completely wrong. And it's like, well, what are you talking about? The only response to somebody like this is like, who are you and why are you talking to me?
Like, go away, bro. Man, what are you saying?
A lot like you, I remember going, my family never had a lake house or any kind of, like, no, dude, he's got the broccoli cut. That's what
I can't with the blue steel shit. Like, come on, man. Anyway, go ahead. Finish your story.
I mean, I was just finishing up by saying, you know, I had friends that had lake houses and things like that. And it was always, when I was a kid growing up, it was always like, man, it'd be awesome to have a house that you can kind of escape to in the summers. And
yeah. Or if the economy gets shut down for 2 years, you can go to something like that.
Well, yeah, I was fortunate enough to live in places that didn't mind too much. Yeah. So, but anyways, the idea that these people can come in and just tell you that you're wrong about that, or that any of it's you know, it's like people in massive cities on the coast telling the people in flyover states that they're polluting by raising cows. It's like, fuck you guys. Like, what are you talking about?
You remember that guy on Twitter who like was in a plane and he's like flying over some part of middle America, and there's like, you can see the pattern on the ground beneath him. It's like the farm pattern, right? That you see in these like agricultural areas. And he tweets out, he's like a reporter for, it was like some coastal newspaper, the Times or whatever, or the Washington Post. And he's like, you know, every time I fly, I always wonder how the ground got into this pattern. It amazes me every time. And everyone in the comments is like, it's a fucking farm, you moron. Like, what do you don't even know? Like, you're so stupid. Don't say this kind of shit out loud. People can fucking see what you're saying.
Yeah. The burger you ate at the airport before you got on the flight. Who cares where all your food comes from in this country?
The great A meat. That's a wrap for tonight. That was great, Scribe.
Thank you so much for having me. I do want to point out one thing just because I saw it in the chat. There's some hate on Smith machines. I would just say, buddy, the Smith machine is the only way you're getting to partials, which is the only way you're truly going to failure. So if you're not using the Smith machine, I actually view you as a pretty low quality lifter.
Subpar. I'm telling you, man, you and me obviously have been talking Smith privately thanks to, you know, the gospel of Sulik. But I haven't watched any Sam's videos recently. You've been watching them?
Every day, brother.
He did one a couple weeks ago where he talked about being on gear. Is that right?
Well, I mean, I think it's pretty obvious he's on gear.
But he never talks about it though.
I don't think he likes to set that example for people. I think he's admittedly a absolute freak when it comes to weightlifting.
Yeah. Yeah. He's got all these, he's a genetic freak for sure. 100%. Yeah, I like it. Okay, tell people where they can find you, what you're doing. The floor is all yours, buddy. Once again, thank you for your time. People like when you come on, so we appreciate it here at CBP.
Yeah, man. I'm a Bitcoin scribe on Twitter. I'm trying to write more. And that's really it. That's really all I have.
Good. Okay. Till next time, everyone. Take care of yourselves. Tomorrow night, Bitcoin Magazine, come to the chat. Be reasonable in the chat, please, for fuck's sake. And we'll talk to you next time. Well done. Don't forget, everybody, lots of other stuff on CBP Media Network, including Two Whites and a Blue, me, Joey, my brother-in-law, Mike, and our friend Will talk about all the problems millennials are having with finance, romance, and just getting by. If you'd like CBP, if you like the NHL 94 podcast, I guarantee you'll like that one. Search for it, Two Whites and a Blue, anywhere you get your podcasts. We look forward to seeing you.